Good afternoon. It's 12:10. I'm Steve Smith, sitting in for Adrian Kobo today. Adrian has the day off, and we have Food for Thought, a special edition, and we're talking about beer today. Dave Winslow, what do you call yourself, Dave? The brewologist?
I do everything. I'm the brewmaster by default, because there's nobody else who does our brewing. Toilet cleaner, floor sweeper, accountant.
We're probably going to concentrate more on your beer making skills. Good. And your marketing.
That sounds a little bit more interesting.
Because toilet cleaning, I think most of us have a hang of that.
Yeah, it's not fun, but well, brewing is a lot of cleaning too. So
I'm sure there is. Well, okay, let's talk about just the creation of beer. It starts off with every beer has four ingredients.
Yeah, your basic stuff, according to German law, you have water, you have yeast, you have malt, and you have hops. So okay. Four
the
basic hops are
the flavor.
Ingredients.
What does the malt do?
Boosts your alcohol potential. So okay. It creates starch to sugar to alcohol.
Okay, so that's where the sugar comes in. It comes from the malt, mm-hmm. which turns through the brewing process with what? It mixes up with yeast?
Well, the yeast does the job of eating the sugar, but yeast doesn't do a very good job of eating starch. So the chemistry part that comes in here is, involves enzymes. You know, uh-huh. Your body has enzymes, your stomach and I think your pancreas create some enzymes. Those enzymes convert things to other things. So
okay.
It starts out as, I just brewed a couple days ago, put about 150, 200 pounds of malted barley in a big container. And you add hot water until it's about 148 to 160 degrees. That's the temperature that these enzymes become active. And then they change the starch. The grain tastes like starch. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like flour.
Right.
Kind of like that. And then after about an hour, it'll convert the starch to sugar. And then you got your sugar that yeast likes. And then you got alcohol.
Okay, so the yeast can't do its job until the starch from the grain turns into sugar.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and the maltsters, the people who take grain, they steep it in warm water and it germinates, and then they shut that process down. They've already done most of the work for you. They've enabled the enzymes to be active once they get warm at a certain temperature. So,
oh, wow.
That's done at the malting facility. It's they do a really good job nowadays of getting that just right for the brewer.
So let's talk about just kind of the evolution of the American beer drinker. Because we start off at the beginning, middle, and most of the 20th century, and it's basically just lagers.
Like, yeah, a lot of lagers.
American mass consumption lagers. Then what happened?
Well, I mean, looking back in Sioux City, before all the several prohibitions that hit the big breweries that were in town, they were all making lagers. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they're cheap to make. They probably don't dehydrate you as much because they're only 3 or 4% alcohol. So you actually, it's a safe type of product to drink. So you can kind of see why those were popular for a while. I think probably what's been changing is if you think about the average American, their standard of living, it's pretty good now. So you have enough people who have maybe just enough disposable income. They want something, more. They want something more special. They want something more flavorful. Maybe they're getting sick of the kind of things their parents used to drink. My parents used to drink hams. Mm-hmm. They didn't drink craft
from
beer.
From the land of sky blue waters.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't taste like sky blue waters. But I couldn't drink it now, but I think I snuck one or two when I was a little younger. But anyway, we know what our parents were drinking, and we just, we're demanding maybe a little more flavor. There's the food revolution. People want, locally grown food that's, the quality is going to be a little bit better. It's made on a smaller scale, so there's more heart and love that goes into it.
Fresher,
more exciting flavors. Mm-hmm. It's probably a generation thing too, I think.
As opposed to buying a tomato in a grocery store that was picked in South America and put on a truck
Or it was genetically engineered to last for 4 to 6 weeks before it goes mushy.
Right.
It's edible, but it doesn't have as much flavor as what you'd get from your farmer's market tomato.
So is that something as a microbrewer that you try to strive for more locally sourced ingredients to?
Yeah, well, a lot of that has to do with, we're not nearly as efficient as a large brewery, as their margin is like 7%. That's like hardly anything off of their, when they sell something, they're selling it for, they're making a profit of like 7% because they produce millions and, you know, millions of gallons of beer a year. Well, for 7% us,
7% on millions and millions and millions.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah. And it takes one guy to make 600 barrels of beer. It takes one or two dudes to make 600 barrels of beer. Barrels are like 30 gallons. And a smaller brewery like our place, we only make 3 barrels each time I brew. So it takes, still takes one guy to do it in the same amount of time. So we're, you know, we have to have a better margin for sales. So if you want to make a, if you want to be able to sell your product for a little bit more expensive, you have to have something that has a lot more flavor. And the fact that you have to, in order to afford to use all those expensive ingredients. In our case, we grow a tremendous amount of our fruits. The majority, a grand majority of it is stuff that we locally harvest, either in Sioux City. We get a lot of sour cherries from Sioux City, or from our orchard where we grow like apricots and other raspberries, which are really cost intensive. Bigger breweries have a harder time affording those ingredients because they have to pay, you know, wholesale prices, which is still pretty expensive.
So you're getting fruits and things like that from your own. You have an orchard on.
We're just about a mile and a half from here.
Okay,
we have a 2-acre orchard, and we really been focusing on planting the stuff that's expensive, mm-hmm. that's hard to get. It's hard to get on the market. Like there's certain things that are just really hard to get fresh. You know, like apricots.
Uh-huh.
They're tough to grow, but if you can get them and either dehydrate them or freeze them, you lock in the freshness. You know, right there, the stuff you get at the store, it's mushy. It's not packed with the flavors that we get from our homegrown stuff.
As opposed to like a canned apricot or...
Yeah, there are some good canned apricot purees, but they're very, you know, very expensive.
Mm-hmm. So I think we kind of touched on bringing flavors, things like fruits, things I've noticed beer, like there's a lot of beer sours mm-hmm. these days. Talk about some of the trends in beer. I know a couple, maybe 5-10 years ago, IPAs kind of started getting big. Talk about just general beer trends once we start the microbrewery age mm-hmm. or microbrew age to where we are now. What's hot in the world of beer right
People
now?
People still love the IPAs. There's some that are going to be IPAs for life. Mm-hmm. But what we're seeing is people who got into it and got into it too much, they've kind of gotten sick. Their palate has become fatigued. They're sick of the bitterness. They're sick of the hops. Not all, but some. And they're actually, their new favorite is either one or two things. It's sours mm-hmm. Or it's barrel-aged stouts and things like that. That's what I've seen from my customer base. People for a couple years ago, first opened, they just love the IPAs. And then they're kind of, you know, they're venturing out into other things. I think the thing that's exciting about sours is the fruit flavor is accentuated by the tartness that is produced by bacteria or wild yeast that's in there. So it really brightens the fruit flavors quite a bit. So people really are getting into that. That's kind of been a trend that I've seen. And sometimes they're lower in alcohol too, so you can have a couple. Sometimes if you drink a high alcohol IPA, like a double IPA, you only have one, and then you're kind of done.
Right. Now, I've noticed drinking stouts, especially like the coffee-flavored ones, you seem to feel worse the next morning after not consuming very many of them.
Well, some of them have more. Typically you're going to use literally twice as much malted barley.
Uh-huh.
And so there, you know, there's a lot more stuff in there. There's a lot more of the tannins and everything else that comes with the yeast byproducts. If there's wheat in there, some people have, you know, issues with wheat.
Gluten.
There's more of that. Most stouts don't have a lot of wheat, but I believe there's still some gluten even in, I believe, in barley. If you're drinking an 8 or 10% big stout, you limit yourself to usually one or so. Otherwise, it does kind of feel it the next day. They're meant to be enjoyed slowly.
Right.
Just savor all that good roasty sweetness.
So now, what are you entering your third year in business at Jackson Street?
I think we signed our lease in March 3 years ago. So this will be into our third year of, you know, the lease for our space. And then the summer it'll be will have been open for 3 years.
Okay. Well, do you have any big plans for the rest of the year? What's going on down at Jackson Street?
Well, we right now we're in that one of those phases, business cycle, where we're spending a lot more than what we make. Mm-hmm. We're right now we're purchasing all of our barrels, thousands and thousands of dollars of barrels, and then the ingredients for next year's stouts and barrel-aged porters and barrel-aged sours. So right now is the planning phase for next, you know, the big season. We're already planning ahead for next year, but I'm also planning a bunch of really nice lagers for, we do a Bockfest in early March, March 3rd, where go back to the traditional German beers that only have four ingredients. You know, those exciting flavors that the younger 25 to 45 year old people are wanting right now. Those are great, but we're going to do some traditional stuff. And then once we get into mid-spring, later spring, we're going to hit, you know, more of the sours, the barrel-aged sours, IPAs, low-alcohol beers that are refreshing and won't make you feel bad the next day if you have a couple of them. That's a trend, too. You know, people who have kids, we want them to be able to have a couple beers. So we're shooting to make more even-kill beers for newbies and people who want to have a couple of them.
Now, you've mentioned barrel-aged a couple of times. I want to talk about that because that's an interesting trend to me. Talk about, it's not, some are whiskey barrels, some are wine barrels. Mm-hmm. How does that work?
Yeah, the whiskey barrel is, you know, it's a wood vessel. You'd think it's a harbor of bacteria and funky stuff. But since it had whiskey in it...
That's killed everything.
It's killed everything. All the first pioneers who started using them, their owners of their breweries were very nervous about it, just because it's wood, it's not sanitary. But yeah, the whiskey kills all the bad stuff in there. I've never had an issue from a barrel before. We've used, you know, dozens and dozens of them.
Now, are the insides of the barrels, are they charred also?
Yeah, that of course, you know, they char. Oh, that's for flavor and to kill anything that could be in there before they put the whiskey in there. So you get a lot of really nice. You know, you get some whiskey notes. That's not the thing you want the most. You want, like, the wood produces a little caramel flavor, a coconut, a vanilla. A compound called vanillin is produced from the oak.
Okay.
If you let it sit in there at least 6 months, you get all those flavors. It's good to have it go through summer when things expand into the wood, and then back in the fall, they come back out of the wood. So it kind of goes back and forth.
That process?
Yeah, you want to have a warm season, a cool season. Hmm. Some places will actually have temperature control in their area so they can speed up the process. But a lot of small breweries like ours, we just try to do it with the seasons.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So it gives flavor. It gives some, perhaps a little extra alcohol.
Yeah, I've seen it. You know, if they accidentally leave like a gallon of bourbon in there, which happens, you can hear it when you're shaking it around. You're like, that's a good one. That's a keeper. It can be a little hot though. You have to age that a little longer because the whiskey has to mellow in the beer. Uh-huh. But it could add a percent, half a percent. Usually, it's only a couple tenths of a percent. And then the wine barrels, we get the wine barrels with still about a gallon or so of either red wine or white wine. We age a beer called Berry Bomb. It's a raspberry, aronia, sour cherry, and it really blends well with the Cabernet or the Merlot remnants of the wine that are in the barrel. It just seamlessly goes really nice together because you get, you know, wines, red wines can have kind of a berry component to them.
Uh-huh.
We let those age for about a year and we add bacteria into the barrel. You don't get a lot of whiskey or the oak tones are very light because most wineries will reuse their barrels over and over. So most of the oak flavor has been extracted,
mm-hmm.
but you do get the red, you know, the red wine characteristics and a little touch of oak coming out of there too.
I'm just curious as when you're making wine, do they focus on the new barrels? Is that a better? Do they use those for the better wines,
or
do they use
most wineries
for the better wines?
I think most. I mean, that probably is one of the things that distinguishes the more expensive wines from the other ones. Is how, you know, the quality of the oak they're using, and have they been reused over and over and over and over again? I believe just because of cost efficiency, most places do a blending where they have some each year. They're probably buying new wine barrels to get some of those nice oak flavors, and then they're going to reuse the other barrels, but they're going to do a certain blend with them. But as a person who's not a vintner, I'm not positive about the exact details of that, but that's what I've heard.
Okay. Well, this has been super interesting, but we've only got so much time to talk. We've been talking with Dave Winslow from Jackson Street Brewing Company. and about beer and all kinds of interesting trends in beer and alcohol. And you've been listening to Food for Thought. I'm Steve Smith, sitting in for Adrian Kobo today. Thank you so much for coming out, Dave. It's been a treat having you out here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm sure this is a story you wanted to do.
Well, yeah, it was fun. I remember last time I came out there and I was actually drinking at your establishment.
We had an accordion, too, one time. I missed that person that they moved. That would have been, oh.
Things got a little weird. This is a little bit more sedate and probably a bit more informative. Yeah. But again, Dave Winslow from Jackson Street Brewing Company. I'm Steve Smith, guest hosting for Adrian Coble today. Thanks for tuning in to Food for Thought.